foes, they're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group, since years before, been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link.
They say code war,
we say code pink.
That was Code Pink by Emma's Revolution. Hi, I'm Jody Evans, one of the co-founders of Code Pink. Welcome to our Code Pink radio show, presented by WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, and many other community radio stations like Western Mass Community Broadcasting, WMCB-LP 107.9 FM. We are also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Check out our website at www.codepink.org/radio, where you will find all our episodes from the last few years. Well, this week in War and Peace, we see the continued insanity of the Biden administration refusing to stop Netanyahu from his genocide with our tax dollars. Instead, he continues to ship weapons without the consent of Congress and is asking for another $14.1 billion for weapons to go to Israel. This funding bill has passed the Senate, but with the Republicans in the majority of the Congress, it's been successfully held up, even as Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries threatens to break the rules and push it through. Shame on those elected officials in the United States, because over 70% of the voters want a ceasefire in Gaza. They do not want more of their money going to Israel for more weapons and violence and destructions and inhumanity. Shame on these members of Congress. Has history ever witnessed a scenario where an army deliberately starves innocent children and civilians? Then when they go out to seek food, they are bombed? Footage of Israel shelling on the hungry who went out to receive food from a food truck was one of the many images that broke my heart last week. Voices from around the world continue to call for an end to this collective punishment of the Palestinians in Gaza and to stop this genocide. While Algeria this week is demanding another vote in the UN, President of Brazil Lula da Silva said that the right to veto must end, and the members of the UN Security Council must be pacifist players and not actors who foment war. He was immediately denounced by Netanyahu, who seems to believe he is running the world and what he says is reality. A very frightening monster to witness for not only us, but as we saw, there was a giant protest in Tel Aviv with hundreds of thousand in the street calling for an end to his capacity to continue this madness. Palestinians are one of the final reminders that a future without colonialism is possible. Right now, we continue to prepare for a future without colonialism while so many of these stupid, mostly white men in power across the world are preparing for a world without Palestinians. We are in a very new and desperate time in history. It takes all of our engagement to push us in the direction of peace. All this is happening while the International Court of Justice calls for Israel's regime to hand back the occupied land, including Jerusalem, and compensate the Palestinians, while naming what is happening a genocide. The unthinkable continues, yet the breadth and depth of global voices continues unfettered. This week also began with Day X, the day Britain's High Court heard the arguments and Julian Assange's final appeal in the extradition proceeding brought by the United States government. He faces charges that would result in 175 years in prison for telling the truth and exposing what war looks like to the world. He did this as a journalist. The video he published, Collateral Murder, exposed the cunning down of civilians and two Reuters journalists while US soldiers laughed from their helicopter. So this week we saw Stella Assange host a 24-hour teach-in on the need for a free press. As Julian said often, if wars are started by lies, then peace can be started by the truth. During those 25 hours, we heard Noam Chomsky say that Julian should be given a medal because he is actually contributing to democracy. And Oliver Stone said, he's one of us. He's more than that. He is the collective us. If he goes down, a part of each one of us goes down with him. And the International Federation of Journalists, representing more than 600,000 journalists worldwide, called for Julian Assange's immediate release, while a UN torture expert urged the UK to halt the extradition to the US, that it would be torture, more torture than Julian has already received. Jen Robinson, one of Julian's attorneys, said that this is a case involving important principles of free speech. This is about the public's right to know. I felt Jen's words were so important because we are so surrounded by lies that the importance of the public's right to know is a value that is being lost. And this case and Julian, if we lose that, we lose the public's right to know. So we must continue to fight. Both with Palestine and Julian, it was a week of global voices speaking in unison for peace, for justice, and for the tools to bring us out of the hell we are witnessing into the possibility for a future. Netanyahu and Biden do not represent the future this world is calling for. Well, last week, as Valentine's Day approached, and my heart was breaking into a thousand pieces as Israel began its assault on Rafah, where they had sent the Palestinians in Gaza, calling it the safe zone, I realized the only thing I could do on Valentine's Day was fly to DC and join Medea Benjamin and many of the regular activists in the halls of Congress to tell the members to have a heart and call for a ceasefire, to stop the funding of Israel's militarism and to reinstate the funding of UNRWA so they could continue their humanitarian work for the people of Gaza who desperately needed it. So I flew with the Valentines that have been created and the letter to Congress that we would be delivering with 5,000 signatures on it. Dear Congress, on this Valentine's Day, we ask, where is the love for humanity in Congress? In the spirit of love for humankind, we are sending you, our lawmakers, our ceasefire in Gaza message to end Israel's ongoing genocide that has already killed over 32,000 people in Gaza, including a recent bombing of Rafah in southern Gaza, where Israel had initially told Palestinians to seek refuge. The majority of people who are being killed are women and children. Our hearts break for the people of Gaza with no food, water, shelter, and healthcare. Our hearts break for the Palestinians who lost their Valentine due to Israel's brutal assault, whether it be their partners, their mothers, their fathers, their children, or friends. We hope that you will show your constituents that you value all Palestinians' inherent right to life with dignity. We also ask that funding to UNRWA be restored, as over 2 million Gazans are displaced by Israel's bombardment and 400,000 are experiencing famine. UNRWA is a lifeline for Gazans. Now is a time to increase our support for them, not fund more weapons. On this Valentine's Day, we ask our members of Congress to declare the national budget a moral document that elevates the needs of women and children instead of raining bombs on them. Let our love find its way into the hearts of our elected leaders to resist the overtures and the money of weapons dealers and oil lobbyists, and to instead commit our government to peace, justice, and human rights. Let this Valentine heart remind all those who are on Capitol Hill that love is not hatred and peace is not war. I also wanted to raise my voice about the cutting of UNRWA, a decision that could result in the death sentence to hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. So on today's show, I want to give you a glimpse into what a few days in Congress is like, to encourage you to come and join us. If you can't come to join us in the halls of Congress, you can make it your daily habit to wake up and call your member if they have not called for a ceasefire. It matters that we make power uncomfortable because they are lost in a bubble that is funded by weapons industries and AIPAC and have no connection to life or understanding about the genocide they are funding. They either won't answer questions or have a lot of BS that has no relationship to reality they spout to obfuscate what they are really doing, which is funding a genocide. So on Valentine's Day, we were joined with a classroom of children from a local Montessori school and their teachers. Many of these children were Palestinian, as were some of their teachers. The first door we arrived at had a sign that said, "I love children and let's care for them always." It was the office of Congresswoman Nadia Velasquez from Queens. She was born in Puerto Rico, and it was very obvious that that should be the first place we stopped. The children had created handmade Valentines, all cut in various ways of hearts, and they carried many messages with them. Some were like, "What about the children?" or "Long live Gaza?" or "Why does Israel have an Iron Dome but not Palestine?" One said, "Wake up, look at what you've done to Gaza and Palestine." Another, with hearts and roses, "Long live Palestine" in beautiful cursive. And one said, "Free, free Palestine." And another, "Save the children of Gaza." These were so creative and beautiful penmanship, and I was so excited to see the cursive still exists. They brought them to deliver to all the congressional offices we visited. The sign that I carried read, "Have a heart for the children of Gaza. 500,000 women in Gaza are pregnant, and 160 plus women give birth every day. Hundreds of newborns are at risk." We heard from an OBGYN who had just returned from Gaza. She told us that she performed a C-section without any capacity to affect the pain, sewed up her patient only to have her sent with her newborn out of the hospital into a freezing tent. The surgery was not the worst of this woman's suffering, she said, and it was beyond this doctor's capacity to hold, and she wept. I want to share with you some of the voices of the children that came with us to the office and their teachers.
I'm sending love to the children and the parents in Gaza, and I really hope they get lots of food and water and all the supplies they need.
What do you want to teach this member of Congress?
Wait, what's his name?
Mike Quigley from Illinois.
He supports Israel.
He has not called for ceasefire.
Is that he should call a ceasefire so Palestine can, so they could be free, get the things that they need, so America could give Palestine.
As an adult, I don't want to be in debt to a foreign state, nor do I want to pay for a murderer's health care.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share their message for the congressperson?
I said ceasefire now.
We want a ceasefire now?
Stop funding bombs. That's good. Fund schools instead, right?
I'm sending love to the children of Palestine, parents, the teachers. Schools have been bombed and they don't have their classes any longer, but their hearts are with their children. Our hearts are broken for the people of Gaza. But we love you and we know that you are strong and that you will withstand and you will survive.
It's so lovely being in the halls with them. So as we continued down the hallway, visiting members of Congress who are on the Foreign Affairs Committee, the children left their Valentines and emptied out the bowls of goodies that you find in the offices on the desk of the interns. They were tickled with nuts and Skittles. After the children left to return to school for lunch, we piled into the foreign policy hearing room for hearing on the Houthi. We took up both rows of seats with about 30 of us, each of us with red paint on our hands. We were told no signs, no talking, or we would be arrested. So the 30 of us sat there silently with our red hands raised as the members of Congress had their 5 minutes to tell their lies and paint horrific pictures of the Houthi, saying that Congress must fund a war against them because they were disrupting global shipping. Not one mention of why, that no one had died in their blockade, and it would end when there was a ceasefire. The testifiers were shills for the weapon industry and told more exaggerated lies, which is very hard to sit through and not say anything. Too hard for most of us. Leading, as she always does, retired Colonel Anne Wright rose and walked to the doors to leave. But before she did, she shouted, "Cease fire! Stop the lies! The blockade will end when the genocide of Palestinians does." She was pushed out the door by the police officer. You know, the point she made had been fully missing from the hearing. She made it outside without being arrested. And next, Kevin rose. He'd flown out from Los Angeles after attending a rally with me that Sunday. And he started to sing Lowkey's song, "Free Palestine." The guards were not sure what to do with him. The woman officer was pulling his hand behind him to arrest him. But when he agreed to stay out, said he was from LA and didn't know the rules, he was set free. Let's hear from Kevin and others as they disrupt and leave the hearing room.
I sang lyrics from a Lowkey song, "Free Palestine."
Oh, she was going to arrest you for singing Lowkey's "Free Palestine"?
Lowkey's song, yeah.
Oh my God, Kevin. And wait, you flew all the way up from LA to be here with us today, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, of course.
Thank you for singing.
Of course.
None of this is true. We
free
see
my people, oh man!
One of the members of Congress that was in on the Foreign Affairs Committee is Congressman Brad Sherman from the San Fernando Valley. And he was one that offered 5 minutes of lies calling for a war on the Houthis. I caught him. I was coming out and asked him to call for a ceasefire. He said, yes, a ceasefire of Hamas, but not Israel. Clearly not understanding what the terms of a ceasefire are. He's also the person in Congress who's created the House Knesset Parliamentary Friendship Group. He's been there since 1997 and received over $700,000 from the pro-Israel lobby, which was his largest contributor last year. He represents Israel more than the needs and the desires of his constituents. But after we were pushed away from him by Capitol Police, who told us to leave him alone and held us back as he moved, raced away by staff, Medea Benjamin took on another member leaving the foreign affairs briefing. Congressman Jim Baird from Indiana, an ex-military man, as Medea questions him, imagine that there is absolutely no acknowledgement in his face that she exists or is speaking. He is fully ignoring her without a hint of disturbance or care that she exists. His staff speaks, but the member is mute and cold until the elevator door closes.
Don't you think that by ending the genocide in Gaza, that would be an end to the Houthis?
Thank you so
disrupting
much.
The
appreciate it.
Commercial traffic in the Red Sea? Wouldn't that stop the disruption of traffic? Why don't we talk about the real problem, which is the Israeli terror that is causing the slaughter of people in Gaza, and the Houthis are trying to do something about that. And you don't even mention that. Can you please say, what do you think the Houthis are getting out of this? They're trying to stop the slaughter in Gaza. Would you call for a ceasefire in Gaza?
No comment right now. Thank you both.
So we're asking
thank you all
the
so much. Yep, we understand.
Congressman, can we call for a ceasefire?
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Congressman, you talk about terror in the Middle East. It's not the Houthis. They haven't killed anybody on the ships. It's 27,000 dead from Israeli terror.
And also, terrorism in the Middle East is Israeli terror. That's what's happening.
The Houthis have not killed one person. Israel has killed 27,000 people.
Genocide supporter.
Next, I want to share with you Motaz from Gaza. He calls himself Taz, and he's been walking the halls with us for the last few months and was one of the last to leave the hearing. I asked him what it was like for him.
Honestly, I would say that I'm shocked, and I am a little bit, because seeing it in person is different than just reading about it. It was absolute, what was that, an hour and a half? Absolute disregard for Palestinian lives. No mention of Gaza, really, or the fact that a ceasefire would solve all of the issues they talked about in there. There was lots of talk about the Houthi threat and all the Iran-backed proxies, when in reality, all of these groups have said, stop pummeling Gaza and committing a genocide, and we will stop any efforts against you. And even in the 1 week where we had a temporary pause last year, all attacks stopped. So I don't know why what they spent 90 minutes for, because the answer is right in front of them. But that's obviously not what they want. So a farce, really. Shocking.
Thank you.
Later, we read in the media that the hearing had been constantly disrupted. Good job to all those who were inside, not letting the lies, hatred, and violence fill the room uncontested. You can join us in the halls. We start every day at 10 a.m. Go to codepink.org/events and find the day that you want to come and join us and sign up. Once you sign up, we'll add you to our WhatsApp list and give you more information about what the day you're joining us looks like. But we need you to be engaged, and we want more of you in the halls of Congress with us. Leslie Angeline from San Francisco has been in the halls every day with Medea since October 7th. She's excellent at spotting members and located one waiting for the elevator as we were passing by. She asked him if he was calling for a ceasefire. Here's another form of not responding while pretending to. He acknowledged we were there, but didn't answer any of our questions.
What are you doing, ma'am?
I'm filming your response.
No, I don't want to be filmed right now. I'm going to vote.
Yeah. What are you going to go vote on?
Whatever's on the dais.
All right, well, she just asked you a question.
If you would call for a ceasefire in Gaza.
I can't hear you, ma'am. What was that?
Would you call for a ceasefire in Gaza?
I've signed many letters to that issue, ma'am. So
you have.
If you go back,
excellent.
You can look at the letters that I've written on the issue of the Middle East war.
Does it include a call for a ceasefire?
It includes a lot of things. You may look at them to review them. You can see exactly what it calls for.
You can't tell us?
I've told you, go look at the written statements I put out. Thank
and
you
did
very
they call
much.
For a ceasefire?
Call for a cessation of hostilities.
Okay, so then that's a call for a ceasefire.
Ma'am, don't put words into my mouth. I told you, go back and read the statements I put out.
This is a member of Congress who's elected to serve the people. Then we ran into one of our favorite members of Congress, Congressman Mark Pocan from Madison, Wisconsin. Congressman Pocan has been an anti-war vote that we've been able to count on for years, and one of the leading voices on the War Powers Act that passed through Congress 3 times, trying to stop the U.S. engagement with the Saudis on their war on the Houthis in Yemen. He was as happy to see us as we him. He stayed to meet some of the Palestinian families and talk to them and meet with the Doctors Against Genocide who are spending the day with us. He shared with us that the Democrats don't understand, as they are standing with AIPAC, they are standing with those who are attacking Democrats who are running, and that it will affect whether Democrats are a majority in the House. He was exasperated by how ridiculous it is that too many of his fellow members are funded by AIPAC and towing the line for Israel. He told us to keep the pressure on AIPAC and the other members who have not called for a ceasefire. There's another amazing person with us on Valentine's Day, Josie Gilboa. She was in the Air Force as a retired member of the Air Force and had been part of the NSA while she was there. She joined us after spending the morning with an Ash Wednesday action outside of the White House. So she came with ashes on her forehead. And as we went from office to office, she was wearing her uniform and speaking up and describing the violence that is against everything she was taught as a member of the military, and that she was there to use her voice and her privilege in calling for a ceasefire.
I'm a 17-year military intelligence officer.
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome. I also spent the last 7 years working for DIA, ODNI, and NSA for 5 years.
Okay.
So I'm coming to you as an informed patriot, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I really want to get my voice out and make a bold statement about how veterans are feeling about what's happening over in Gaza and the unconditional support that we're providing to our supposed ally, Israel.
Okay.
The UCJ, as you know, has come out and stated that there is plausible genocide. The Supreme Court has come out and stated there is plausible genocide. Anyone in any country with digital access or with the internet has seen the genocide taking place. So my concern here is, at what point is our leaders here in America going to respond to the international community and the Americans and the veterans and the mothers and the fathers' outcry for this to end? We're moving straight into World War III. Nobody wants this. A ceasefire would literally put this at a stop in its tracks.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah. Thank you. You know it too, because I see your green badge.
For the next few hours, we went from congressional office to congressional office, delivering the Valentines with the 5,000 signatures, speaking with interns, speaking with different members of the congressional member staffs, and catching a few more in the halls.
We have 5,000 people who signed a Valentine to the member of Congress, and it's at saying, where is the love for humanity in Congress? Here we are in front of Congresswoman Louise Frankel's office. Congresswoman Julia Brownlee, Southern California. Congressman Tim Walberg's office from Michigan. Representative Kwesi Mwuni's office. Congressman Jerry Connolly, that he needs to call for a ceasefire. We're in front of Adam Smith's office. Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, Ohio. Frederica Wilson. We're delivering this Valentine to Congressman Mark DeCano. We're here at the office of Congressman Mike Quigley from Illinois, who really needs to hear from us today. We're delivering this Valentine to the offices of Mike Simpson from Idaho. Basically, we are watching
a genocide happen and not calling for a ceasefire, not having this end while we're watching children bloodied, limbs of children every night. Like, this has to stop. This is destroying the psyche of the freaking whole world. This is serious. And everybody here walks around like nothing's happening while their hands are on this. So we have 5,000 people who signed this Valentine to say free my Palestine and not only call for a ceasefire, but we have to ask for the funding to UNRWA to continue because humanitarian aid is desperately needed. You've already got 100,000 people who have been killed or wounded, and people are dying all every day from no medical care. How many women are giving birth with nothing? C-sections with no support. So as a woman, she knows better, and she represents people who have heart. So she needs to find her heart again and call for a ceasefire. We're here at Congressman Garrett Graves from Louisiana, who's celebrating Carnival, which is about life. So we're gonna ask them to care about the lives of the Palestinian people. We're here delivering this Valentine to Congressman Jim Costa of Southern California, who says stand with Israel, and we say stand with the people of Palestine.
We ended the day with the Valentines delivered. Thank you to all of those who signed on to call on members of Congress to have a heart on Valentine's Day and free my Palestine. When we come back, I'll take you through the halls of Congress the next day, but this time we're with Susan Sarandon and a special treat of meeting with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who joined us in the halls to an outpouring of love, tears, and gratitude. You are listening to Code Pink Radio, coming to you through Pacifica Radio's WPFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York City, KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles.
Bodies found in a mountain of parts. Netanyahu told you just another child of the dark. Clear it's gonna take much more than thousands to march. More than a speech, more than a poem, more than a track of music. Gonna take more than a sit down with Bassem Youssef. Even bringing back ambassadors is an atlas useless. Long as you pump oil for Apaches and the tanks they use in freedom just beyond reach for people you cannot see. He's wheezing and cannot breathe and screaming through the concrete, looking for his four children. Bombs leave structures that I wouldn't want to call buildings. My fingers pointed at this government, you all killed him. Tell me that you wouldn't take up arms if those were your children. Let me make the factor clear, those bombs were manufactured here. And they want the land as theirs because of natural gas in there. Feel death in the atmosphere while we hapless stand and stare. And a little boy begs for his brother's strand of hair. Truth is I don't know how anyone can live after digging for their dead kids buried under bricks. Israel is a terror state, terrorists that terrorize. I testify, my television televises, I'm telling lies. This is not a war, it is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
That was Loki and Mia Khalil singing Palestine Will Never Die. Loki released this at the end of November last year. His lyrics shed light on the ongoing situation in Gaza, a narrative of hardships and the endurance of the Palestinian people since the war's commencement. Loki's lyrics describe the stark realities and struggles faced in Gaza, while Mia Khalil's haunting melody adds depth to the song's message, addressing topics like the media's inadequate coverage of war crimes and the broad international support for Palestine. The track stands as a poignant musical testament to the resilience and unyielding spirit of the Palestinian people amid adversity. Loki is an Iraqi British and singer-songwriter, and Maya is a Syrian British singer-songwriter. Both use their voices as anti-colonialists and anti-Zionists. I encourage you to follow them. So welcome back again. I am Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink, and you are listening to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. On the first half of the show, we were in the halls of Congress on Valentine's Day. The next day, Susan Sarandon took the train from New York City to join us. We wanted to use it as an opportunity to leave a strong message with Congressman and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who replaced Nancy Pelosi as the leadership of the Democrats in Congress. He has the power to push for the funding bill that went through the Senate that would provide yet another $14.1 billion to Israel. It was a $95 billion funding bill that includes the funding for more weapons to Ukraine and Taiwan, all of it very wrong. Why is there none for money for the needs of the people, but plenty of money for the devastation and destruction of life and the planet? Remember, the war in Ukraine and the war in Gaza have contributed what a year of carbon releases from 106 countries would be. Such a shame. We also wanted to get to Speaker Mike Johnson, who has put the brakes on the spending bill that flew through the Senate. He says it needs to change or he will let it die. The Senate bill didn't include the funding he wanted for the U.S.-Mexico border, so we are appreciative that they are slowing it down even as Jeffries tries to pull it through. Which is the war party again? So I picked Susan Sarandon up at the train station and let her know that the attacks on her had already begun. Congressman Richie Torres heard that he was one of the offices we wanted to visit, as he takes a lot of money from AIPAC, yet his constituents want a ceasefire. He tweeted that morning that Susan Sarandon was planning an action against me in DC for supporting Israel. At a time when Jews felt threatened by anti-Semitic violence, Ms. Sarandon said Jews are getting a taste of what it feels like. As a sitting congressman, I will refuse a meeting with the likes of Susan Sarandon, who traffic in anti-Semitic victim blaming. I also read her the first of the hundreds of comments to Richie's tweet from Brahim Al-Husseini. He said, anti-Semitism is real and dangerous. And sadly, the overuse of that label as an attempt to silence legitimate criticism of Israel has rendered powerless of late. Also, it takes less than a minute to find out that AIPAC is your biggest donor, Richie, and pro-Israel groups are your third largest donor group. We all see you. As we jumped out of the cab at the Rayburn steps, we were met with a reporter from Al Jazeera who asked her why she had come to Congress.
We need a ceasefire. We need a ceasefire immediately. I mean, there's never been peace that's been gotten through violence. So that's what we're hoping, to block this bill and to, with more funding, until there's a ceasefire.
President Biden and the White House say that asking for a, quote, humanitarian pause is enough. Is that enough?
No, we need a ceasefire. We need a permanent ceasefire. It's like shooting fish in a barrel right now, with people stuck and not being able to get out, the hospitals being destroyed. You know, all you have to do is look online and you can see that it's a complete genocide. And I think most of the world agrees. Maybe this little world that AIPAC owns doesn't agree, but I think that the least our representatives can do is give as much time to have a conversation as they're giving to AIPAC.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have the money that Richie Torres has gotten from AIPAC to ask to be able to talk to him. But I think that that's the way democracy works, isn't it?
What do you think it is that's impeding Congress from going along with the American people? Because we know a clear majority have said they do support a ceasefire.
That's right. It's money. The allegiance, you know, to Israel is about money and perceived power. But you're right. The rest of the United States doesn't want it. And clearly the rest of the world is not on the same page as these people that are insisting that we go ahead. And I think that it's been very, very dangerous, also making people in the United States in jeopardy. And the other aspect of it, even if you're not following what's going on, if you think that Palestine is too far away or that it doesn't involve you, I think there are a lot of Americans that are just furious right now because we don't have health care, we don't have housing, and we're giving billions, literally billions, to a country that has free health care, subsidized housing, free education. So I think it's beginning to also weigh heavy on those people that are suffering economically and don't understand and see no rationale, especially when you look around and see so many other countries and what South Africa did, you know, and making it pages and pages and pages of research showing that a genocide is taking place.
When the reporter asked her about Richie's tweet and those who accuse her of anti-Semitism, she responded with,
"This is a conflict not between Muslims and Jews. I mean, half the people, more than half the people that I've been marching with are Jewish and have connections to the Holocaust. It's not a religious war. It's about aggression on the part of Israel. It's about taking land. It's about occupation. It's a war of occupation, and it's been going on for 75 years. Hamas didn't even exist for 45 years, and thousands of people have been killed. So, no, I mean, calling people anti-Semitic who question Israel is just an old way of getting people to shut up. They said Bernie Sanders was anti-Semitic, you know. Obviously, I mean, I've said in every speech I've talked about how I'm against the uptick of violence against anyone because of their religion, including Jewish people. This doesn't have anything to do with criticizing Jewish people. This has to do with criticizing what Israel is doing now that's killing so many people."
Our first visit was to the office of Congresswoman Betty McCollum. She puts forward a bill every year to protect the children of Palestine. It's called Defending the Human Rights of Palestinian Children and Families. She was in a meeting but came out to thank Susan for her courage and for using her voice for the people of Palestine. It was a beautiful greeting. Our next stop was to the office of Hakeem Jeffries, who has taken $1.2 million from pro-Israel groups and is the minority leader of the Democratic Party. He refused to meet with us, but we filed into his office and had it overflowing with activists who were joining us this day with Susan. And she shared with them,
"And we've lost over, I should say, 102 of our family have been killed.
I'm so sorry.
And a baby froze to death last week on the Rafah border. So I'm very appreciative of you being here and of your support and your steadfastness in this fight."
Is there any way that, do you get a sense of do they know that there's a resistance within the United States?
Yeah, they do know there's a resistance.
Even though we keep sending weapons that the rest of the United States is mostly with
Palestine. They know. I do feel that they understand that we are being silenced by our elected officials. They do understand that we're being actively silenced and that we're raising our voices. And I think that we keep all hoping for a watershed moment where, like, we're all going to collectively see our own humanity. And I think the people of the world have recognized that. And thank you to your voice. For raising our voices.
Recognize that. It's just within this little bubble of AIPAC money and influence through the years, through many, many years, that there's no dialogue, there's no conversation. You know, the people that won't see me, they won't see me because they're afraid to hear another narrative. And the reason they want to hold on to the narrative they have is because they're receiving over $1 million,
right? Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a lot of money and a lot of support, and AIPAC is very, very strong, but I have to believe that people are stronger.
A reporter then asked her, what she would have said if he would have accepted the meeting, and she responded.
The entire world recognizes, and most of the United States recognizes, that this is a genocide. And we know from experience that violence is not going to bring around peace. And the fact that I don't have 1.2 million, how much did Jeffries take? You know, I can't compete financially with AIPAC, but I think that as a representative, he has to listen to the people. And so I'm sorry if he's blinded by how much AIPAC has influenced him with money. But these are lives that we're talking about. I'm a mom and a grandma, and I can't take it anymore.
After taking over his office for about a half hour, we moved on to meet with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from Detroit, the only Palestinian American in the Congress. She has been censored by the right-wing haters, but has kept her dignity and her fierce questions that expose the dehumanization of the Palestinians that includes her. But she continues to do her work and represent her district and call out the violence. She met with Susan privately for a few minutes. The meeting included her high school teacher. The Congresswoman pulled down a photo from her shelf and shared it with Susan, showing those days in high school. She was so young. Susan shared her concern for the Congresswoman, who brushed it off and said she was just doing her job. We were soon joined by Congresswoman Cori Bush from St. Louis, Missouri, who was the member who wrote the resolution calling for the ceasefire and has had Rashida's back from the beginning. She is also leading on the call to end members of Congress owning stocks in the weapons companies they benefit from, that benefit from their voting for higher military budget each year. After the meeting, we moved into the halls with the Congresswoman because there were hundreds who joined us this day and they couldn't fit in her office. As she stepped out into the mass of people that lined the hall, she was engulfed in tears and love and gratitude. And the halls were awash with the most wonderful feeling of appreciation and celebration. Here were their heroes, these courageous women, using their power and their privilege for the occupied and the oppressed, without fear of what are real costs to their lives. It was a beautiful experience. And as Rashida reached the end of the line, one of the women offered her words after a long and grateful hug.
See, Rashida is defying everything that they're trying to silence us about. She is standing up for Palestinian rights. Her mere presence in Congress is making waves and making a difference. They are trying to erase us, but Rashida has stood, her and Representative Cori Bush have stood steadfast, spoke loudly, represented with principle and dignity, and recognized the Palestinian people for who they are.
We tried to move down the hall, but there were so many of us, and we were being forced with mics from reporters in Susan's face. So we stopped for more questions.
How do we break through? What kind of messaging do you think that needs, that the type of message that, you know, got through to you?
Well, I mean, I long ago recognized that the Palestinian situation was wrong. I mean, this has brought it to an active place. But I mean, all I can think of is that it just takes education. People that, as I said, are curious about facts will find the facts, and they speak for themselves. A lot of people don't want to see the direct feed from there because it's too upsetting. So, I mean, I just say, it's your money that's doing that, you know? Are you okay with that? And then there are a lot of people who just object because they don't have health care. They don't have free education. We don't have subsidized housing in this country, and we're sending billions to Israel and told that there's no money for us to have those things. And so for people that don't even relate or care about that because Palestine is too far away and they've got enough problems, they're upset about that. And that's going to be a very difficult thing to explain, why we can keep sending billions to these wars that nobody really wants to end because they're making some people very, very rich.
She was then asked how to get others in Hollywood to speak out.
How do you think more Hollywood celebrities can be influenced to at least...
Well, certainly not during Oscar season. At my agency have told me that they said to them, don't tweet, don't look, don't because you'll end up like Susan Sarandon. So they're making an example of me to make sure that people don't even ask questions, which is a huge problem aside from Palestine. When you're in a country that claims that it's a democracy and you can't ask questions and you can't talk about things, it reminds me of the McCarthy era, you know? And, you know, you can't worry. It's like worrying if you're slip-showing when you're fleeing a burning building. You know, there's certain things you have to do to have respect for yourself. And at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you're going to look back. Sometimes it takes a long time. You know, Iraq, it took a long time because I was ostracized then, too. But I'm really hopeful because of the kids. I can't say that enough. I find that they're really educated and passionate.
As we continued to walk through the halls, Medea asked Susan about the cost to her for speaking up.
I got fired from my agency of 10 years, and I've been getting threats and things like that. And I lost work. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's not as important as people dying. So
we finally made it to Richard Tory's office, who calls himself a Zionist and has taken $1.2 million from pro-Zionist donors.
You know, I'm sure that AIPAC has a narrative that excludes some of this conversation. I mean, just jumping to anti-Semitic usually cuts off conversation, but it's, I mean, he knows I'm not anti-Semitic. That's ridiculous. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. If he's really afraid to talk to anybody, then I guess we won't talk to him. Maybe he's at lunch. Maybe he's in the bathroom. I don't know where he is. But it would be nice if he had a conversation with people that are being affected, and maybe they could... we didn't bring a 1.2 million, so we probably won't get listened to as easily as he did with AIPAC, but we're going to try and see what happens.
Let's give a big boo for Richie Torres.
Boo! And maybe I would just say that in this little world that exists on the Hill and with AIPAC and everything, there seems to be one feeling, but in the larger world, in the real world, he's not the majority.
Thank you.
This is a humanitarian issue.
Yeah. We understand.
People are upset because people are dying. Civilians are being murdered. People are being starved. Hospitals are being blown up. You can't keep blaming things on politics and Hamas and all of this other excess thing. People are talking from their heart, and they are upset that they are seeing that 10,000 children have been murdered, that these kids are being have amputations, their parents are being killed, hospitals are being blown up. People are getting attached to the people they are seeing on social media. They're being humanized, which is the complete opposite of what you're doing with this kind of rhetoric. You know, these are human beings, and Americans are upset because you are killing other human beings with our tax dollars.
I want to thank you for sharing a few days in Congress with me. Now come and join us. We're in the halls every day. You can sign up at codepink.org/events or write us at info@codepink.org. And if you can't join us, you can be engaged every day. We have ways to be in action and to support Palestine at codepink.org/Palestine. Like Susan, continue to share stories across your social media from those sharing what is happening on the ground in Gaza. And like Julian Assange says, wars are started by lies, but the way to peace starts with truth. Do all you can for peace. The world is watching. There is more in the world than this little bubble of lies we are swathed in. The Palestinians have exposed the naked truth of the violence at the core of the US empire. Together, we can end this madness. Thank you for listening to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Until next week, be peace. Thank you.
Bush and Bin Laden, you think they're foes? They're in business together.